What are the results of good stewardship? Hello and welcome to Good Word. We come today to the final lesson in the sequence in which we've been talking about stewardship. It ran all the way from January here to the end of March. Along the way, I have been very pleased to have as my conversation partners Brent Berglund and Matilda Fry, two colleagues from the School of Theology here in Walla Walla. We've looked at a lot of things. And today, appropriately, we talk about the results of stewardship. And I would like for us to think fairly broadly about this. I've actually listed three or four things which I'll just mention, and we can talk about them. But one of the first results of good stewardship is the preservation of personal integrity. I think a second one is that the resources of the owner will be well tended and well used. A third one is the cause to which resources are assigned will have maximum benefit. And the fourth one I would list would be onlookers will receive a sterling witness, a good witness. So let's talk about the first one, the preservation of personal integrity. What comments might we make about the preservation of personal integrity?
Not only the preservation, but the building up of their integrity and their reputation, that's an invaluable resource to have. If you've been a good steward, you will be entrusted with more the next time. What better praise of your work than, hey, here's another project, a bigger one, more important.
Okay. That's true. That goes a little bit beyond personal integrity to the rewards of it. But when I think about personal integrity, I think about the role of conscience. And I think everybody who hears my voice today has had the experience of having a troubled conscience over something. And I heard long time ago that a clear conscience is a good pillow, a troubled conscience is a very bad pillow. And I think to go through life with a sense of personal integrity, that there is no big difference between what you profess and what you practice, is a huge benefit. You know, you're not troubled by guilt, you're not troubled by sorrow if you have a high level of personal integrity. Any examples of integrity, Matilda?
David comes to my mind when, after he raped Bathsheba, was part of the killing of her husband, and his conscience didn't snap in.
Oh yeah, until later.
Until the prophet Nathan came and told the story. A very touching story. And suddenly he even had to tell him directly, you are the man.
Yeah.
Remember?
So that's quite an incident.
Sometimes we miss those moments where our own consciousness is able to recognize where we stand, and we need somebody from the outside to point us, to make us aware of the things.
Hopefully,
and the story of David is one of the terrible examples, isn't it?
Hopefully we don't have to be reminded as bluntly as
yes.
what Nathan
yes.
did. And then David's confession, of course, it was very quick and I think very deep, but it didn't resolve the consequences.
But his song in Psalm 51 does speak to what he is looking for, and that is, restore to me the joy of your salvation. He had lost shalom. I think we've talked about shalom in this series. Shalom, that sense of peace. He didn't have inner peace anymore, and he was asking God to restore that inner peace to him, right? To give him back shalom.
Yeah. Yes.
To me, some of the most stirring examples are from the book of Daniel. You know, the three young men and Daniel multiple times, where his personal integrity is very important. He preserves it. What about the resources of the owner that will be well tended and well used? That's a result of good stewardship.
The parable in Matthew 25 of the talents, which surprisingly throughout this series, I don't think we've spoken of once really. The owner of the goods entrusts these things. It's not gifts and talents like we have talents and abilities. It's talents as an amount of money, a Jewish and Greco-Roman term of a talent of money. They were entrusted to a person, and the owner went off and left. When he comes back, he finds that a couple of them have used it and have grown that amount. I think if I were to entrust my money to a broker who I said invest this money, I would expect a good return. and they're doing a good job of stewardship if they're getting me a good rate of return. These days, I don't know what a good rate of return would look like, but
you know, it's virtually non-existent. Well, you'd have to have a lot of money to get a good return.
But in the end, is it not, if I entrust somebody with my money and say, hey, make this grow, I want to see growth, right? Mm-hmm. And in this case, I think the resources of God are a blessing. We've talked all this quarter about how we should help the poor, how the tithe is supposed to spread the gospel, how we can give of our time and our money to bless people. That means that God would see his work in the world grow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think about that when people collaborate, there is a certain power that comes from doing things in a collaborative way that does not exist when you do it by yourself. The lifting power. I see this on the GoFundMe things, for example, you know, that all these people give and all of a sudden there's thousands of dollars that comes in. Yeah, the parable of the talents. What about the cause to which resources are assigned having maximum benefit? And I guess we kind of bridged over to that a little bit. That when people work collaboratively and faithfully, then a good cause can have enormous advantage. And by the way, in our religious community, we have this thing called a 13th Sabbath offering. You know, every quarter has a 13th Sabbath, and for many years they have picked mission projects. And the offering is taken on the 13th Sabbath, and it goes to that mission project. And I've been on the other side of that, where sometimes a whole school can be built because all around the world people give to that one project. It's a very interesting one, maximum benefit. Of course, redeeming the human race is one of the most noble causes to which we can contribute in its own way.
The system, the Old Testament system, where Israel was to leave, gather the fruits at the end of the year, and then even leave the outside of it for, so everybody was able to come in and take and benefit from it. So each little thing was taken care of. In that sense, God is the best steward. He makes sure that every part of the land that he has given them as a gift should be used for all the whole population, and nobody was excluded.
Yeah. What a different way than the way we think of, I mean, if I can use the word welfare, they had a welfare system in Israel, but it included the people who were poor having to go to the field, having to glean it. And I think, Dave, you'd mentioned opportunity was what many of the poor need is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Israel provided that. The rich had the land, but they left the edges to be gleaned. They didn't glean it all and then just give it to the poor, but they left huge portions for the poor to come and glean. What a neat way.
They left the edges. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. They did not harvest all the way to the edge of the field. So I grew up on an almond orchard, and that would mean that the trees right next to the road, I wouldn't take the almonds off of, and I would leave it for others to come along. They wouldn't have to march to the middle of my property. They could go right to the edge, but they would have to come and pick it themselves. But it was there for them.
Mm-hmm. Does that happen now?
Not in this country.
No. You know, there are gleaning laws in this town where we live that after onion harvest and after you can go and glean, you have to ask permission of the farmer. But they are acquainted with the idea of gleaning. I have received gifts of Walla Walla sweet onions because people went gleaning. You have to be quick, though, because they go bad.
Yeah.
I want to go to one more here, the idea of the kind of witness that is produced, the good witness that comes from good stewardship. And I have to share with you a text that I ran into many years ago, which I have come to love. It's 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 11 and 12. Now, most people know 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 13 to 18, and nobody reads verses 11 and 12. But look at what they say here. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. This must be a wrong text. You have your Bible there, Brent. Look it up. Because I think he talks about working with your hands.
And that's going to be in 2 Thessalonians.
Oh, that in 2?
Yeah, the idea. Although verse 11 here, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commended you, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need.
Yeah, that's the one. So this is a mistake in our lesson here, that the wrong text has been put
in.
This
looks like Peter.
So read that one again. Do you mind?
No, and in fact, if you'll let me go up just a bit, starting verse 9, "Now as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed, if you do practice it toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia, we urge you, brethren, to excel still more and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and to attend to your own business and work with your hands, just as we commended you, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need."
Now, that's a mouthful right there. I think that's a wonderful description of the good consequence of good stewardship. Any comments on it?
Good stewardship means, we've talked about it before, but I'm in charge of me, first and foremost. I think, Matilda, you mentioned it in regard to the Sabbath. My first job is to, if I have work, I do my work. I don't meddle in other people's business first. I do my work.
Yeah. But I like that passage in Thessalonians, because it talks about how you leave a sterling witness, I'll put it that way, but you're also not forced to be dependent on other people, which I think is a great result of good stewardship. Sometimes you have to rely on other people. But Matilda?
The early Christians became known as these kind of people. After the resurrection, there are outer biblical documents that speak of the way they behaved, how they lived and loved each other, and how their habit of doing good and taking care of each other, how that became known as a result of the teachings of Jesus. And that is a great example of being a Christian.
Yeah. And you know, I know in East Africa, in Uganda and places like that, where the AIDS epidemic struck now 15 years ago or more, that at first everybody ran from that disease. But over time it was Christians who began to provide care for the people who were suffering, caring for their children, establishing orphanages, and it has provided a remarkable witness.
And in the end, shouldn't all of this talk of stewardship end up glorifying God? That's our ultimate witness.
Of course. That's the final one.
Being a witness.
Not witnessing, but being one. It's something you are, whether you like it or not.
So. Yes.
Hey, well, thank you very much. We're coming to an end here, but thank you, Brent and Matilda, for your staying by for the whole quarter and for your contributions to this subject. Hopefully people will see stewardship not just as a question of money, but a question of the management of life in such a way that we sustain ourselves and others and also give glory to God. So my thanks to you. My thanks also to Jared Miller, and my thanks to those of you who listen. And I will just say this, that many of you from far away, we like to hear from you, although sometimes we're not faithful in responding. But for Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.